The last two Mishnayos at the end of the second parak of Avos, Reb Tarfon Omer, Hayom Katzer v'malacha merubah v'hapa'alim atzelim. Reb Tarfon would say that the day is short, there's a lot of work to be done, and the workers are lazy. V'asochar harbeh, there's a lot of profit to be gained, u'bal habayis docheik, and the employer is pushing. Hu haya omer, he would say, lo alecha hamalacha ligmor. It's not up to you to finish the task, but you're not free to ignore it. If you learn a lot of Torah, you'll get tremendous sechar. And the employer that you're working for can be trusted to pay you for your work. And you should know that sechar for tzaddikim is in the next world. These two Mishnayos, Reb Tarfon is describing the importance of utilizing your time, the importance of recognizing that there's value to what you do in Avodas Hashem, but you should know that you might not see the Schar in this world, because the Schar for Tzaddikim is in the next world. Rabbeinu Yonah says, Hayom Katzer HaMalacha Meruba. Hayom Katzer, the day is short, refers to the days of a person. The days of a person are short in comparison. I mean, short compared to what? Short in comparison to the melacha of Torah. Because Torah is endless. Arucha me'eretz midah, rechava mineyam. So the task to grasp Torah is really enormous. And the day is too short for the job. Chafetz Chaim writes that Adam HaRishon was put into this world and he was at that time immortal. So how long would he live? 6,000 years. If that's the time of this earth. And what's he supposed to do in that time? He's supposed to learn Torah. So there's 6,000 years worth of Torah to be studied. So how much is an individual going to learn? Yeah. Adam HaRishon himself could have spent 6,000 years learning Torah.
But now that there are more people, is there still 6,000 years per
for person? Everyone.
But we only live
70 years.
So
we're not going to finish the job. That's what Chafetz Chaim says. And to understand the enormity of Torah, in other places we just say Torah is infinite. It just goes on. It's not possible to put a make it a finite. Even though the Gemara does in fact give a finite description, but even the finite description of the Gemara is way more than a lifetime endeavor.
What's the finite description?
It's based on the Navi of how many Amos they wrote down the Torah on a scroll. It was sideways, open and open. It was enormous, basically. It was, I don't remember offhand exactly the numbers, he brings it. It was more enormous than a person could finish in a lifetime. That's for sure the message of the Gemara.
Is it built on
what?
Meaning, if someone learns
Tesis,
so he has that
Tesis
plus what he's
going to
learn, or he's
even
behind Tesis, so don't even count.
What do you mean? If a person learns a
Masechta. And he learns Mefarish on Masechta,
does the Torah that he learns accrue to the one who wrote it?
He learned what the one who wrote it wrote.
Right.
So does he know what the one who wrote it plus whatever he's learning? So then he has both. Meaning, does it push him forward and then he learns past that?
Do we get ahead of Tesis? Never. What are you saying?
Now he has what Tesis learned, plus he has...
No, he has what Tesis wrote down. Tesis knew a lot more than what he wrote down. What they wrote down. Whatever. Rashi. If I learn Chumash Rashi, does that mean I know more than Rashi?
So everybody's getting no.
If I did Rashi, it's just a Chacham, it doesn't mean I know more than Rashi, because I did Chacham too. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
When you learn something and someone writes, does that give the person who wrote it more?
Yeah, that's for sure. That's what we meant. This is a chus for the person. Right, this is a chus.
Not the amount of Torah that's learned.
Well, he brought that Torah to the world. So Rashi gets schar whenever we learn Rashi.
Wants to just get expansion.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Is there ever an expansion? We started off at a point that it's impossible to grasp, and then we keep trying, but we're never going to finish it.
We're getting even less each
time.
The Jewish post had this much, and they wrote down this much, and that's what we get. If we can't ever expand on what they...
Well, there are more Sfarim. No, there are. And then there's commentaries on Tosfos.
Mm-hmm.
Like the Marshal, and the Maram, and Marshal. And then there are Sfarim that explain the Marshal, called the Marshal Aruch. And then there are... keeps it, there's May Menuchos. There's all kinds of Sfarim that explain the Tosfos and the commentaries on the Tosfos. You know, there are always going to be more as time goes on.
Is more less?
More means that we don't understand it as well as they did before. Take the Mishnah. At one time, Mishnah was sufficient. There was no Gemara. Everyone understood from the Mishnah what the Torah Shel Peh was, but then we don't get it.
So, about amount of Torah, it's getting less every generation, not more.
Torah goes on and on. How much we'll learn from Torah, you want to know?
Yeah, so the people, the amount of
Torah... there isn't this Gat and Hadaris. I'm sure we know less than they used to know. That's not unusual. That's not something we never heard before. This got no hot dives. Right?
How much does quality really matter, though?
Quality?
Quantity.
Entirely.
We're talking about quantity.
Quality is everything.
So if someone who, like, just does...
Quantity without quality is not worth too much.
Even though it's a mitzvah to learn, and let's say someone has a hard time learning. Let's say someone has a learning disability and whatever.
Mm-hmm. They'll learn according to their abilities.
So that's not worth as much.
What does that mean? It's not worth as much.
Well, because it's not really quality.
He, for him, it's the best quality he can do.
So it's according to the person.
Right. It's an individual. So when we say the day is short, that's because the malacha is meruba. In the Rabbanian explains the day is short when you put it in the context of Torah and what there is to learn. So it's Arucha Me'eretz Midah, Rechav Minayam, longer than the length of the land, wider than the seas. So you never get to the end. And the Rabbeinu Yoina brings a medrash that gives a mashal that when Moshe Rabbeinu was 40 days in Har Sinai, he didn't sleep. Like a melech who tells his Eved, you go into my treasure house and you could take from today to tomorrow as much gold as you can put into bags and take it home with you. So, is he going to go to sleep? Of course not going to go to sleep. He'll be up all night collecting gold. So too, Moshe Rabbeinu said, how can I go to sleep? The Baruch Shem is giving me Torah. How can I sleep for these 40 days? He didn't sleep for the 40 days. And how much more so we should minimize our sleep to endeavor in Torah. So, the day is short and we really have to take advantage of the time. I think it was Shagaf Mendelovich used to say, "Nutz oitz the zeit." Always use the time you have. Don't let time get wasted. Time is precious. You don't have that much of it. You have to chap a rein. And there were gedolei olam that had 5 minutes sedarm. Say it for 5 minutes. A 5 minute seder. Many of them, whatever, throughout the day, because even in 5 minutes you can accomplish things. Over time, 5 minutes and 5 minutes adds up. Eventually, it's hours and days. It all adds up. There's a famous story of Rav Bengis, who made a Siyum HaShas, and he made many Siyum HaShasas. And one Siyum HaShas was unusually elaborate. And they asked why, and he says, this Siyum HaShas is from a Shas I learned waiting at Chasnas. Just sitting at weddings, waiting. I went through, had an own Seder. It was a separate Seder for waiting at wedding Seder. And he just finished Shas from waiting at weddings. So, you know, it's the idea of not to waste time. I've seen in other Svarim that many Gedolim felt, if you want to be great in Torah, it's not what you learn during the ordinary times that makes the difference. It's what you learn when no one else is learning. Friday afternoons, Ben Estarim, times when people generally not learning, who's learning then? That's really what divides the great people from everyone else. So the day is short, there's a lot of work to do. V'ha'pa'alim atzelem. Now to make things difficult, the workers are lazy. Rabbeinu Yonah says, people are lazy to learn Torah, even Chachamim that are Zrizim, are Misaso. Why? Ki teva ha'odam u'lisaso. This is a natural phenomena, and no one is spared the natural tendency to be lazy. just there are some that are more and some that are less. The Ramchal writes a lot about this in Maseches Yesharim, in the Indian of Zrizus. Laziness is a natural phenomenon. It's not an acquired trait. It comes natural. And everyone has to combat laziness. And you could look at it two ways. One, you could look at it just putting in the effort to study Torah. The second level is, even if you're studying, you can study lazily, or you could study not lazily. If you're lazy when you study, the quality will be low. If you are not lazy in your studies, then the quality will be high. Now, do you get by with barely understanding it, or do you insist on really understanding it? I once was talking to a friend discussing giving a shiur, and he said the reason it's good to give a shiur, because when you learn, even with the chavrusa, you'll be satisfied with 90-95% understanding. When you give a class, you need 100% understanding. When a Rebbe teaches Gemara, 6th, 7th, 8th grade, high school for sure, they have to work and work and work on that Gemara more than they've ever done in their life before, because it's not enough to get by. You have to anticipate every question. You have to be able to understand it well, to answer every question. And it's a whole different level of Havana. Giving a class makes you sharp, and you can't be lazy. You can't be lazy with it, because else you just won't know what's flying when the kids start asking, and you won't be able to answer the questions. So laziness is a natural state that has to be combated. On the other hand, there's a lot of schar. But you have to know the Baal Bayis is impatient, Kava Yochel. The Ribbono Shel'Olam commanded us to learn Torah, and he says, Rabbeinu Yonah writes, that sometimes you get paid for the hours you put in, and the Baal Bayis doesn't care, but it's not that Rabbi Kadosh Baruch Hu. The Baruch Hu told you to do Melechus HaTorah, and it's expected of you to do the best you can, and if not, it's going to be bad. He says, the wording of Ben Yon is, She'ein lecha barashus hibat lafilu sha'a achas. It's not like you have an hour off. There are no coffee breaks. Now, there are coffee breaks. So what does that mean? You have no rashus to be mevatel from Torah, even sha'a achas. So, what the Swarm teaches is that when a person is engaged in Torah study, there should be no distractions and no interruptions. That's why many batei medrash, you're not allowed to have a cell phone that's on, or you can't have a cell phone at all when you go into Beis Medrash, because it's very distracting. However, if a person doesn't get up and get a coffee at some point, maybe they won't be able to learn as well. So then getting up to get the coffee is to enhance your learning. So if getting up to get the coffee is to enhance your learning, then it's okay. That's all part of being able to learn. Or taking a break in the afternoon to air out and refresh yourself. So then that comes a part of your learning. We wouldn't call that little Torah. But it's a fine line, because if you go ahead and spend a half hour schmoozing while drinking coffee, that's not helping your learning. And if you go for extended breaks that are unnecessary, that's not justifiable. So there are justifiable breaks and unjustifiable breaks. Ben Azmanim, the idea of having time off from yeshiva. There are those who rail against Ben Azmanim. What's Ben Azmanim? Does the sun rise, the sun set? V'gisa b'yom v'layla, you have to learn every day. What does it mean, Ben Azmanim? There's no Ben Azmanim. And others will justify Ben Azmanim, that without a Ben Azmanim, they won't be able to learn with the same vigor and intensity afterwards. So in order to maintain a freshness and a train of vitality, it's important to have periodic breaks. And that's the justification for Ben Azmanim. It doesn't mean during Ben Azmanim the person doesn't learn at all, but this is the balance. There's a balance you have to make, that there's so much to do, there's no time, but if you go on overload, so then it could end up being worse than if you would take the time out that's necessary to refresh and then get back to it. So it's a balance. And ultimately, when you're honest about it, a yeshiva cannot tailor a program for every student. They make general decisions of breaks and general decisions about curriculum for the general student population. But there could be yechidim, special people, who don't need that schedule. And they should have a more intense schedule and should accomplish more. They can't expect everyone to do that, but it's certainly not wrong for some people to maintain a more intense schedule during the time when the yeshiva is now out of session, or even, you know, ben hasadarim and so on and so forth. So if you're really looking to find people who are intense in their study, you find out what they do during their free time. But you know, the concept that the yeshiva creates a certain system, and that's because that's what's considered acceptable for their population, so to speak, for their bachur. And then everyone has to, at some point in life, tailor the system to his needs, because ultimately they're not looking for every individual what he needs. And this is true, you know, for boys or girls. You have to be able to find a place that's your own and what's appropriate for you. The Mishnah goes on to say, Lo alecha hamalacha ligmor. Rabbi Yehuda says, don't think that it's impossible for me to finish learning all there is to learn. So what difference does it make, and what benefit is there for me to try? So that's what the Mishnah is saying. Lo alecha ligmor, it's not your responsibility to finish. Your job is to be amal b'Torah, and you're doing the Ratzon of the Ibn Hashem. If you do that, you've done what the Ibn Hashem wants you to do. You're not a ben chayrin to mevata from it. You can't say, if I'm not mechuyev to finish it, maybe not mechuyev to do it at all. That's not true either. And according to the amount that you study and learn, you're going to be getting schar. And you could trust the boss, so to speak, to pay the wages. So, in a very concise way, Reb Tarfon is trying to explain the importance and significance of Torah study, which leads us to understand that even when a person is not engaged in studying Torah full time because he's in school or he's working and he's supporting a family, he still has to learn. He still has to take time every single day to learn. It's not a midas chasidus to have a seder and learn when you're working. You're obligated to learn. Everyone's obligated to learn. You have to support a family too, but you have to have time to learn. Learning is not optional. That's an obligation. And everyone according to his abilities. If someone has only a couple hours to learn a day and he puts his all his energy into those 2 hours, it's no different than the fellow who has 10 hours and puts energy into 10 hours. And if someone has 10 hours, only puts energy into 6, so he's worse off than the fellow who's working and putting his energy into 2. So the numbers are deceiving. It's not a question of this guy learned 6, this guy learned 2. Yeah, he learned 6, he shouldn't be learning 10. He learned 2, he should have been learning an hour and a half, and he squeezed 2 hours out of it, right? Depending on where you are, what you're doing. Some people learn more, whatever it is. My point is, this is something that is not to be looked at as optional, which leads us to the issue of women who let their husbands go learn. And I've heard from Rabbi Rothbard many times, and maybe you've heard from him as well. It's a terrible thing to say. I mean, she lets him. Does she let him put on tefillin today? Does she let him keep Shabbos and make kids? What do you mean let him learn? Of course he learns. What do you mean let him? My wife lets me go to learn. She tells me, go learn. It's not something that should be looked at, you know, an extra thing. She lets me go to spend some time with the boys. You know, that's not what it is. So a person has to understand it and recognize it for what it is and its importance. You know, I give shiurim to men, and they say, my wife threw me out of the house. She said, I have to come. I said, I'm tired. Go. You have to go learn. There are people who come to a shiur. It amazes me. They'll come to a shiur after days work. They haven't eaten supper yet. They're exhausted. Some of them fall asleep during the shiur, which doesn't bother me. They're exhausted. And they still come to the Beis Medrash to learn. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing. Okay, getting back to the Hayom Katsev HaMalacha Merubah. So there's a mashal that the Medrash brings of a melech who has this pit that has to be filled. So he gets these two workers to take the dirt and put him into the pit. So one of them is very happy to be employed, and he goes about his job. His job is to put sand in the pit. That's what he does all day. And he gets paid handsomely for his job, and he's a very happy person. The other one is bitter, and he says, this is ridiculous. I'll never fill this pit. There's no way for it to be filled. So why should I waste my time trying to fill the pit? Well, that's when it comes to Torah. Some people look at it and say, I can never finish. I'm never going to have the time to do all this. So why even bother? That's the wrong attitude. The Baruch Hashem said to do it. So you do what you can do and be happy that you're doing it. And if you're not going to finish it, you're not going to finish. It's not going to be held against you. Rabbeinu Yonah writes, not here, but he writes in his Sefer Tshuva, an amazing thing. He says, if a person was pursuing Torah mitzvahs, and Nebuch, this person died at a very young age. Rabbeinu Yonah says, the Baruch Hashem gives him schar as if he did his Torah mitzvahs for 70 years, as if he finished a lifetime. That's the normal lifespan, whatever it is. If the Baruch Hashem took him away prematurely, it's not held against him. Then he gets schar for the years he didn't do Torah mitzvahs that he would have done had he lived longer. Because that was his life. His life is doing Torah mitzvahs. So there is a nusach in the Medrash that if a person learns to the best of his abilities before he dies, he's given all the Torah as a gift. In other words, you have to do what you can do. But you can't do all of it. It's okay. If you do what you can do, then the Baruch Hashem gives all the Torah to the person. It's kind of like Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu tried and tried and tried. He kept forgetting. To the Baruch Hashem gave it as a matana, the Gemara says. There's a Medrash that before a person leaves this world, he's given all the Torah. If he worked on it, if he toiled in it. If he didn't try, so why should he get it? But if you try, then by the end, you're going to get it all as a matana. What are you saying? What's the point of getting the Torah? Yeah. Ah, that's a good question. Because what's he going to do for the rest of his life? In other words, it's misleading. You know, we think of this world as the whole package, but it's not. And therefore, it makes a big difference. You know, the Chacham Avraham Yosef brings a mashal from a Sefer Medrash David. He says a story, I had to look at it twice because it threw me off when I was looking at this mice till I understood it. He brings that Chazal taught us, I don't know where this Medrash is, the Sefer Medrash David quotes, a tremendous Musar lesson about a country, this country, and they have a very interesting legal system or kingdom. They have a melech, but they have a new melech every year. There's a term limit, 1 year, king for a year. And the melech is not a local. So they go out to the wilderness, and the first person they find, they tell him, we'd like you to be our king. And you'll have absolute control over everything in the kingdom. You'll be in charge of housing, you'll be in charge of finance, you'll be in charge of agriculture. Whatever you say goes, you are the boss. You can take whatever payment you want, you can eat whatever food you want, you can wear whatever you want. You're the absolute boss, and it's a huge, huge country. It's all yours. But a year to the day of your coronation, you're fired, and you leave town with nothing but the clothes you're wearing now. So, like, you think, is it Kedai to be king for a year? So people would come, change their wardrobe, put their clothes in a bag, mark them the date, and for a year they run the country. Total dictatorship, whatever they want goes, all in their control. The end of the year, time's up. You can't take anything with them. Undress, check them, here's your old clothes, goodbye, send them out of town. And they look for a new king. So I don't know what that does for continuity of the country and so on and so forth, but it goes on to say, one time, they came across a man and offered to be king for the year. And this man was a chacham. And he's saying to himself, what do I get out of this? King for a year? It's not worth too much. So what he does is, every few days, he takes something that he likes, something that's precious. He boxes it, tapes it up, and ships it out to his home. And he continues to do this. So at the end of the year, when he has to take off his clothes and put on his old begadim and leave town, it says in the way the marshal goes, the most more obvious where it's going, he says he cries and he laughs. And they asked him, why are you crying? He says, I had a good job for a year. I feel bad. I'm leaving you then. Why are you laughing? I put away. I stored up that when I leave, I still have what I need when I get home. I didn't waste my time here just enjoying myself. So, of course, the Nimshel becomes very clear. This world is the Gmalchus. All the Taivis, all the pleasures, all the benefits, it's all here. And we're king for a year. 70 years, 80 years, whatever it is. You have Bechira, whatever you want. It's all out there. But after time's up, we take off our clothes and we leave this world the same way we came in. Nothing. Came into the world with nothing, we leave with nothing. The wise person sends stuff home, stores up, puts stuff away. So when he gets back home, he has got plenty of good stuff for him. So the Torah mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim that we do are all waiting for us when we get back home. So the gift of all the Torah before a person leaves this world is a tremendous gift, because it's going to help him when he gets back home. That's the concept. We're here a very brief period of time. In the big scheme of things, we're a very short period of time. What?
If someone doesn't get that gift of Torah, the Torah that they've learned throughout their life, that's what they'll have in the next world?
Right. So what's going to happen is they go up to the next world, and there's going to be various heichalos, various chambers, and various shiurim going on, and they won't have access to all of them because they don't have the prerequisites. Now, that is one description given in the Zohar Kadosh of these heichalos. And by the way, there are separate heichalos for women. One shiur is given by Devira, and one by Miriam, and one by different famous women of Tanakh are giving shiur. What?
That's what's based on for women. How much are they, or how much?
It's probably not so much Torah as much as it is the Avodah and the mitzvahs. There are different heichalos for women, different heichalos for men. That's one description. Ramchal gives a different description of what happens in Derech Hashem. And essentially it's how close you get to Shechina. What proximity you have to be Nenemiz of Hashechina. So the tzaddikim are the closest, and they sit around the Shechina and they bask in the glory and they have tremendous tainug. And everyone else is further back in line, and some people are just see some lights in the distance. Like, you know, on a dark night, see some lightning off somewhere in the distance, out somewhere up there, and you don't know where it is, but you know you see that lightning way far away, right? That's what it's going to be for some people. They know there's like Shechina shining somewhere down there, but they're not going to get that close to it.
What?
What
would be Gehenna in that case?
Gehenim, some would like to say, Alpi Drush, are the people who know there's something good and they can't get there. Some people will say Gehenim is the same as Gan Eden. They're all in the Beis Medrash. Some people understand the Shir and some people board out of their box. But in the Zohar's description of Gehenim, Gehenim is its own place. And it's a painful place. And it's a rehabilitation place. That's how we always describe it. A Beit Cholim. It's a rehab center. And a lot of rehab is very painful. But by the time you're done, Gehenim, usually you're rehabilitated. And you're all good to go. Some people are so bad they never get out. But for the average bad person, they get out of Gehenna eventually. So it's a good thing for them. In any event, the point of our Mishnah is to explain or emphasize the importance of learning, doing mitzvahs, the importance of understanding that we have to really chap arayin because we don't have that much time to do it. And understand that there's tremendous schar beyond what we can understand, because we don't even see it. The mountain schar for tzaddikim is not in this world at all. The schar is in the next world. So, to a certain degree, there's a leap of faith going on over here. There's a bitachon. And by the way, it is one of the animamins, right? One of the animamins is schar v'einish. We don't necessarily see it on this earth. But we have to know, and emuna, that there's going to be schad, there's going to be einish, which means that everything we do makes a difference. The things we do positive make a difference, and we get rewarded. The things we do bad make a difference, and we get punished. So that's one of the things. It's an emuna. It's an emuna, schad, einish, and we have to be aware of that. We have to be aware. In lamarata tarahabe, nasa schahabe, and you'll get that schad, even if you don't see it here. You know, the there's a common thought that I've seen, I've said many times, and usually it's when confronting tragedy, when confronting the early demise of somebody, someone who didn't live as long as we would have liked. And when facing these tragedies, the point that we have to come away with is we have to do the best we can do. No one knows how long they have on this earth. You have to do the best you can with the time you have. That's what you're supposed to get out of it. You can't, you know, can't feel like a person's shortchanged. Like Benny Yonah said, if a person does what they're supposed to do, then the Baruch Hashem gives them schar as if they were here the full amount of time. You know, there are, that doesn't, I don't mean to say this in a way to diminish the enormity of a tragedy and how people have to respond to it. That's a separate issue. I'm just saying, as far as our personal avodas Hashem, as personal, part of our personal growth, a person has to understand we have to constantly work on being the best we can be. And that's what's expected of us, that's what's demanded of us, and that's what we're supposed to do. That's how I understand these Mishnais. Hayom katser malacha meruba hapalam atzelim. Don't think you have to finish everything. You have to be the best you can be. You'll read these stories of great women, great men, and we're not going to get there. We're not going to be as great as they can be. Fine. That's not our responsibility. Our responsibility is to be as great as we can be. It's our personal growth. We have to be as great as we can be, and that's what's expected of us, and that's what we have to do. We have to focus on every day, making the best of every day. And if a day doesn't go that well, so you take a shower, go to sleep. Tomorrow's a new day. Start all over again. One bad day doesn't have to lead to another bad day. And we just have to do the best we can. And understand that that's what it's all about. And again, whether it's our learning, our husband's learning, mitzvahs that we do, husbands do, whatever. As long as you're on the same page, that you're both striving to be as good as you can be, things will be fine. If there's a disconnect there, there's a problem. That's when you get problems. Someone asked me recently why there's so many unhappily married people. And I wasn't quite sure where they were going with this. A lot of happily married people. So they said, well, there's no question. There's a lot more articles and booklets about people who are unhappy because you're not going to write about everyone who's happy. But I didn't know where they're going with this. And as they went on to speak, it sounded like they were saying how there's a disconnect between what girls' expectations of their husbands are, what husband's expectations of their wives are, with learning, with working, with helping, with supporting, and within the family. Like, is a girl expected to raise the family and cook the dinners and clean the house and do laundry and do all the work to, so he's just sitting and learning? And I said, listen, you know, if, as a rule, if you want to understand why some marriages aren't happy, I would assume it's always going to boil down to how inconsiderate and self-centered each spouse is of the other. As if when they're each worried about themselves, you're doomed to an unhappy marriage. If they're worried about the other person, they'll be blessed with a happy marriage. That's like Aleph Beis. But as far as expectations, a lot of it has to do with what you grew up with, what your environment is, what your anticipation is. And if a girl grew up expecting her husband to support financially, to do the work and to help out, and then it doesn't happen, she'll be unhappy. If she does not have that expectation, she'll be fine. There were always Nashim Sitkanias who told their husbands, I know it's your job to support me. I know it's your job to get a, you know, go to get work. It's a mission, it's a gemara, it's a ksuba that a husband takes responsibility to support his wife. And I'm telling you, I don't want you to do that. I want you to learn now and I will take care of it. There's always been Nashim Sitkanias like that. Not saying every girl is in that category, but there've always been people like that. So as long as the expectations, they're on the same page, that's fine. If someone is pretending, you're going to get into a problem. Whether it's the boy who's pretending to learn and the girl is willing to sign on to support him and she finds out he's not learning, that's not good for Shalom Bayis, and some marriages have ended over that. And vice versa. If a girl really doesn't want a boy who's sitting and learning, she wants someone who's going to support her, take care of her, but she says she's willing, and she's really not willing. She'll be bitter and upset, and that might not last too long either. So you have to know yourself. You can't pretend.
We never did it before, so yeah, I haven't tried. But like, no, we never did working and laundry and raising kids and all those things at the same time. So we don't really know. Yeah, we put the best foot forward and we tried, but like...
But some people know that they don't want to do it.
The question is if you want it or not.
And they're just saying they do.
Question is not ability, the question is what you want.
Right. If you want, it works. If you don't want, it won't. So, again, I just think there's a... If there are so many unhappily married people, it probably is because of this issue, when there's just a disconnect of what they really want in life and what they express as what they want in life. If there's a disconnect, then there's going to be problems. Because they want one thing and they say they want something else. They get what they say they want, but not what they really want. That's a problem. You're not going to be happy. So, it's important that in a marriage, everyone's on the same page. You got to be on the same page for real. It's not a time to be fake. It's time to be for real. Some say that's why the best in Tevim were Tuba Av and Yom Kippur, and then the girls will go out and make Shaduchim, because on Yom Kippur, you're honest with yourself. How often are you honest with yourself? Yom Kippur, you're honest with yourself. That's a good time to get married. Then you can be honest with yourself. You got to be real. You got to be honest with yourself. If you're honest with yourself, you'll be okay. If you're not honest with yourself, you'll survive. People survive, but it won't be ideal.